Welcome to the Becoming a Streamer podcast by Pipeline, where we interview your favorite streamers and learn about their journey to where they are today. I'm your host and co-founder of Pipeline, Snoopy. Today, I'm sitting down with Cross. He started out watching COD montages on YouTube and wanted to help the creators with editing. He never expected to become a full-time streamer on Facebook. It just goes to show you how getting your foot in the door and adding value can unlock so much opportunity for you. You can find Cross on all platforms, K-R-O-S-S. For now, let's jump in and find out how he became a streamer. Cross, it's so good to have you on the show, man. I've been following your career for the last couple of years, but I know your career's went on a lot longer than that. So I'm so excited to dive in and chat with you today.
Yeah, thanks for bringing me on, man. I appreciate it. It seems like you're doing a lot of interesting stuff with Pipeline. So I'm looking forward to see what you guys are doing in the future.
Awesome. Appreciate it. So the goal of Becoming a Streamer podcast is really, you know, jumping into the story of how you got to where you are today, not exactly like kind of where you are today, but I think it's important to give the viewers a bit of context. What platforms are you on? How much content are you creating right now?
Oh man. Okay. So platform wise, I'm kind of all over the place, or at least I used to be. Right now, I'm solely focused on Facebook with Facebook gaming. That's what I've been focusing on for about the last year and a half. I kind of pulled back a little bit from making video content on YouTube, but originally I started on YouTube. And then I went from YouTube to Twitch as like the adpocalypse came in, where ad value was kind of down and things were hit and miss. Branched out into streaming. I actually streamed on Twitch as a partner, Mixer, and then I wanted to say moved over to Facebook. So I've kind of been everywhere, and key areas right now are really just focusing on Facebook gaming.
Wow. So that's, yeah, you've been around some different places. It's really cool. I love that. So when, what kind of follower size are you at? You've got a bigger following on YouTube than you do on Facebook.
Yeah, at the moment.
At the moment, yeah. I mean, I'm guessing that'll change quickly with how things have been going the last year, but what are you at now, just to give them some context?
I think on YouTube, I'm around like 420-some thousand followers. Twitter, I think I linger around 130,000. And then with Facebook gaming, we just broke 120.
Well, that's awesome. And I've been watching your growth last few years, especially on Facebook. It's exciting. So if we went back a little bit, mm-hmm. How did you first come up with the idea of creating content? Like, if you go way back to like that first video, like how did you get into it?
I want to say like when I first saw YouTube stuff, it wasn't even gaming related. It was kind of weird. I started watching motorcycle vlogs and I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. I would love to do that. But then at the time I was younger, couldn't really buy a bike. So I was like, all right, what else could I get into? And I don't remember the specific video at the time, but if I had to bet, it was back in like Call of Duty, COD 4, back when YouTube was really pushing, like people were just getting into gaming. And I wanted to say it was like a Zergriz montage or something I caught with Call of Duty 4, which is just quick scoping, like montage making, sniping. And for some reason, it really appealed to me. I was like, all right, that looks cool. You know, I play Call of Duty already and I enjoy sniping. There's something about that with games I've just always connected with. And I was like, all right, let's try to do what that guy's doing, because what he's doing is just ridiculous. You know, he kill people, he's not even aiming at them. And you just see him no-scope some guy across the map or do like a 360 off something. And I think there was just something that I clicked with. And that's what really got me into content creation. And at that time, it was limited.
So was it not like, you weren't like, I need to do that 360 no-scope. It was, I love the content he's making, I want to try and make the content?
I started wanting to be an editor, because I saw these montages and I was very into graphic design at the time, doing like Photoshop, HTML stuff. And I was like, man, maybe I could get into like video editing. Like this looks cool. Like all these effects are nice. So I started my channel as an editor. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. What if I just produce content too and just edit my own stuff? You know, that would make more sense, right? So that's what I ended up doing. And then somehow I fell into the commentary black hole of doing gameplay commentaries, and then eventually into live content, but it all transitioned slowly.
That's super interesting. So you started making content way back, and what was your kind of mindset? Was this like, well, 2011, 10? How far back are we talking?
I want to say like 2011 or so. 2011. It was probably like really way back. I think it was, I don't know if you're familiar with Machinima at the time. I think, yeah. I remember you couldn't even monetize your own YouTube channel. You had to go through Machinima or an MCN, which is just a multi-channel network. And Machinima was the big guy on the block. Like he was the number one. The only way to make money on YouTube was becoming a Machinima partner. I guess you'd say it's like equivalent to being a Twitch partner now, maybe just more exclusive. And I was just like, all right, well, maybe I could try to, you know, get my videos there. And that was the mindset. I saw a couple other creators like Hutchison, like Sean Hutchison or OMG Hutch. And I was like, he's doing it. You know, he's a machine partner. Seen Anners, a couple other guys later throughout the years. And I was like, I want to do what they're doing.
And were you trained in like graphics design editing or were you self-taught? Like, how did you feel confident enough to get into that world?
A lot of self-taught stuff. Just looking at online videos, if there were any, you know, tutorials. There are a lot of forms. I got into like Photoshop editing when I was younger, and I started like learning how to make designs and other stuff of that nature. A lot of like graphics. I think they called them like signatures, like these little tiny little.
Oh, form sigs. I remember that.
Yeah, I started editing those like crazy, and I got really good at it. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I could do this into something else. So I started getting into like Sony Vegas, and then I really didn't touch much into like Premiere. Vegas at the time was like the big one. I was like, all right, let's do some like editing here, like video wise. And it was just really simple. It's like just cut clips, you know, that was just cut it. That's all you had to do at the time. Then it got really ridiculous. People using Twixer, which is like this blurry, like slow motion font. Well, not really font, but like a effect. And it was just so funny to see. And you just start trying to like see what other people were doing and try to mimic that.
Yeah. And how did you, when you were first starting out, you obviously don't get as much traction. When did it go from I'm doing this just to do it because it's cool to I need to start making traction? Was it organic over time? Like, how'd that happen for you?
I would say it was like a brick wall, really. When I first got into it, you know, it was just focusing on putting out content. I didn't really know what to really expect because there weren't like getting like 100,000 views back then would be the equivalent of like getting 1 million. And I remember I was only getting a couple hundred views, you know, if that. And I was just like, I wasn't really too worried about it because I couldn't really make money doing it. And I was just like, let's just put out content, see what happens. Maybe eventually I can get a job, you know, doing editing or social media or something. Who knows? And I was just like, all right, so like, let's go for it. So I just started posting content. And I remember like the day I hit like 500 subs, like just, these are just followers. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And then I want to say it took months to get to that point. Maybe almost like a year. Like it was just very slow and almost non-existent. And then over time, I'd say over like the next year, I went from like 500 to 5,000 to 10,000, 20, 30, 40. And it just skyrocketed after a point. And I remember I quit counting after like 20,000. Like it was just so ridiculous because every time you looked, it would just be like, oh, there's another five. Oh, there's another five. And as like gaming got more popular and content creation and like organizations based around Call of Duty just exploded, like FaZe Clan, Optic Gaming, Dare, Darth Empire, and just other sniping teams, it just multiplied like tenfold.
That's super cool. And were you working full time as you were like that first year and you're like the 500 subs, were you working? Like, how were you balancing it all?
I want to say when I first started, I was a little bit older because I remember all like the guys that were in FaZe Clan were pretty young. And I started probably toward my senior year of high school or a little bit less. And I didn't really get into it too heavy. So I was working part-time job, like in between going to school and, just kind of balancing. I think I worked at McDonald's when my first job was McDonald's, moved over to Quiznos and like Walmart. Like I've had all these like really weird kind of jobs, transitional, just like I need a job. I got bills, you know, I got stuff I got to take care of and I need money.
To a lot of our listeners, this is the exact same scenario.
So those were the jobs I had and it eventually transitioned into full-time, but that took a long time. I'd say like 4 to 5 years at least.
That's true. Was joining FaZe, was that a no-brainer for you? Was it a big decision?
It was kind of a mixed feeling because at that time, I was always trying to join like Optic Gaming. They were like the pinnacle of esports and just montage making back then. If you were a sniper, you were known for Optic Gaming. And I couldn't join that team. It just wasn't really going to happen. And M40A3 was like a below team below that. These are all sniping teams. So it's so funny to me like remembering this because it's kind of nerdy. But I tried to join that one, got denied. And one of the members from M40 quit. And we co-founded a sniping team called Darth Empire. And I didn't really pick the name. I guess he's just a big Star Wars guy. But he picked that one and that team exploded. So we had a couple hundred thousand followers on that channel. And we were pretty competitive in the montage market. Like we were one of the biggest teams. And then suddenly FaZe Clan came out of nowhere. And they just started gaining hundreds of thousands of subs. And then they eventually passed us. And I met Tommy, the owner, and he asked me to join in. But at that time, I was just like, man, do I really want to stop being part of this organization to kind of abandon what I founded to move somewhere else? So I took a day when he asked me. I was like, I need like a day to think about it. And then I kind of knew, you know, like after like 5 hours, I was like, what am I doing? Like, this team's massive. They're growing quick. You know, it's an opportunity. Just jump in and see what happens. You know, if it doesn't work out, well, it doesn't work out. So I just kind of took a leap. And sure enough, at that time, Call of Duty just became the biggest thing on YouTube.
Yeah. Did you ever go to the house environment or any of those things? Or was it more you're part of the network?
Mostly part of the network. The house was kind of later on, and I want to feel like that was more exclusive. I definitely feel there was like a smaller group within FaZe that was closer.
Yep.
You know, you had certain montage makers. Some guys live closer to each other and they were friends even before. So they were just related a little bit easier, plus being different ages as well.
Yeah. When did it kind of go full time? Was that after FaZe for you, during FaZe? When did you say, okay, now I can really lean into making content?
As weird as it sounds, I think I still get asked about it all the time. You know, it's like, why would you leave? Why would you quit that team? And I think I've done better for myself on my own shortly after. I definitely think they were helpful and beneficial and growing. You know, I probably wouldn't be here without that. You know, we were all part of it. We put out content. And I don't think that they would be where they're at without the creators that we had at that time. Everyone was just so focused on content. But growth-wise, it was definitely a kickstart. I started getting more steady, I would say, after I left. There were some rocky moments, but I think it really let me buckle down on making sure that I was producing enough content and spending enough time on it. But I'd say that growth really came kind of like right toward the end. And then as I left, it kind of fluctuated a bit.
Yeah, it must be quite sobering because then it's all on you, right? There's no network effect happening at this point. It is purely on your own output.
It definitely hits you pretty hard because you're just like, man, you don't have any like social promotion other than just your socials. And it's like, how do you network and how do you branch out?
Yeah. And were you struggling with balancing working with content at that point or?
School and everything else. Okay. It kind of was weird because I started traveling, and this is back when Call of Duty first started bringing content creators to their studio. And it's like, hey, come play the game early, do some DLC content for us, which is like a never before thing. And it was like, all right, this is interesting. So I started doing that with a few studios, and I started flying out. And I lived in the middle of nowhere, Kansas. So I had to drive like 4 hours to Denver. And then I'd hop on a flight, go to LA, and then I'd stay, then come back the next day, drive 4 hours back home. And it was just a mess. Going to school full time during that and then also working was a nightmare. Eventually, I stopped going to class, and I had to figure out what was I going to do? You know, am I going to pursue this full time? Am I just going to kind of just grind out school and see what I needed to do? And it actually kind of was weird because I had a teacher that we sat down. It was an English teacher, and I was like doing some summer classes with her, and she's like, well, what are you doing? You know, it's like, you're trying to like make sure everything's good, but like you have something going for you right now. Why don't you pursue that?
Oh, I got goosebumps.
And see what you can do. She's like, if you fail out in the next year and it doesn't work, you can come back. Like, that's no problem. And I was like, shit, she's kind of right. So I kind of looked at it as like, all right. So I finished up that semester and I stopped. And then it's been like 8 years since. So.
God, shout out to that teacher. That is.
Yeah.
What a gift to be able to allow you just to give you that permission, right? It obviously takes your own work, but to give you that permission.
Oh, it was probably like the scariest thing that I ever decided because I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. How's this really going to affect me? You know, worst case, you know, I didn't really have a good job, you know, working. I was basically working minimum wage and doing okay on YouTube at the time. Could have supported myself, but it wasn't great. And then I was just like, all right, let's just jump into it and see what happens. Worst case, I get a job in another 6 months and just come back, you know. What did I really miss out on?
Do you think that was pivotal in making the transition for you to take that jump? Or do you think you could have done it for another couple of years?
I think I might've been able to stick with it, but I also feel that having that extra free time really let me focus. You know, as soon as I woke up, got out of bed, it's like, you're doing this, you're focusing on just this thing. And, you know, you'd play more, you'd edit more, you'd upload more. And it just really let you have that.
Yeah. What I admire is your discipline, like in saying, I have to do this. I'm going to do this. Cause I feel like a lot of creators can make that leap. Some make it too late. Especially the ones that you see today that are big now could have made it maybe earlier, but some make it too early as well. They feel like, oh, if I just didn't have a job, I would have this free time. And I think you got to be really mindful of making sure you're mentally disciplined enough to be able to make that leap if you're going to make that leap. And you're financially secure enough that, okay, in the worst case scenario in 6 months time, can I just go back and do this? But I'm fighting for the next 6 months.
Yeah. And I think that's where I was at. You know, my responsibilities weren't too bad while I was in school. I was lucky. I lived pretty close to home. Like I lived at home technically. And then it's like, I didn't have to travel. I didn't have to go like live in a dorm. But at the same time, my financial responsibilities were a little bit cheaper when I was 18, but just having that trial was like, all right, you got to keep going. You know, you got to keep like making sure that you're actually going to support yourself. And then I'd say within like a year after I made that jump, I realized like, oh no, you can definitely like, it's been going okay. But yeah, it's rocky. You know, it's waves. YouTube is definitely, I want to say like, as soon as you do really well, it can take it right away from you. Like really quick.
That's so daunting. The fact that, you know, you're solely responsible for your own bills and you're, and it's also your mid, right? Because your mid's fluctuating alongside of this as well.
I'd say that's the killer for a lot of content creators. One, financial stress, how you feel, you know, you start getting into stats and numbers and you let that dictate how you feel, like your success. You feel like a failure if you're not reaching certain numbers, and that'll just destroy you motivationally. And it's like, okay, well, maybe numbers don't necessarily define you as a person or your success, but we look at it a lot. So it's like, how can I create content and do well consistently, but not beat myself up too much emotionally if I do fall short? You know, what can I do? And I see it a lot with some creators. They always kind of get stuck on one thing and they do that for years and years and they don't really progress. It's like, well, if it's not working after 6 months, try something different, you know, and it could be really simple with streaming. Yeah. Stream at a different time of day, maybe stream a little longer, maybe do two streams or stream less in a way. Sometimes streaming less actually helps more.
That's an interesting one. It sounds so counterintuitive, yeah. But if you're really stressed, you're like a day, you're just like trying to cram things in. You've got like a, I don't know, an significant other plus a real job, yep. 9 to 5. Like if you're trying to cram in 5 hours every single night, you're going to kill yourself and burn out and you're not going to be as energetic in your life or in those streams. So it's going to show through in the content as well.
Yeah. And chat will let you know if you have any viewers whatsoever, they will call you on your shit. Like immediately, if I'm being honest, they will know that something's wrong. They will know that you're not talking or you're ignoring them or you just something's off. And if I feel like if you're not having fun, it's going to kind of limit their viewing experience too. So it's like, you have to make sure that you're okay first. Because otherwise, if you're not, like your entertainment level is just going to be kind of like meh. It's not going to be 100%.
How did your mindset change over the time of creating content? I know you've now kind of went on to doing a lot more live content, but in those YouTube days, can you look at yourself and say, I matured within the, you know, starting out to the 400K? Like what growth did you have in that mentally?
I think for me, it was like realizing that it really did fall on me to make sure I was kind of at least trying to make the right content and to not necessarily be afraid to fail. I mean, if you fail at something, it's like, okay, that sucks, but that didn't work out. What's another way that I can keep doing what I want to do? You know, and realistically with streaming, you're kind of limited in some ways. You know, I was stuck as like an FPS guy and I was like, all right, well, what other games can I play other than just Call of Duty? Let's try Battlefield. Okay, Battlefield didn't work out. Well, let's move on to something else. And I tried like H1Z1, which is like a VR game. And that worked for a bit. And I was like, all right, this isn't working out too well. Trends, not as popular. And I think that's the hard part is you have to know when to take a risk and just try. Because if you don't try, like you're going to fail 100% no matter what. But I think that mentally was like the big one for me is like, I realized, you know, uploading Call of Duty videos back in 2011 worked, but in 2014, 2015, it's like, is that same content going to work and be relevant if I'm still producing the same sniping montages? You know, it's like, it's not going to work. So I got more into like commentary videos, kind of tutorial videos, guides, how to improve your gameplay or just really good gameplay. But I think that's the difference is you have to understand that you're in control and you can change what you're doing to some degree. And at the same time, you're really at the mercy of algorithms. I hate to say it. There's certain things you can try to kind of like tweak it a bit, but really if you're wrong place, wrong time, that could just mess you up as well.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily always on you. It's just, you got to keep trying.
Yeah, I think you got to control what you can control, and that's your own output and level of effort, and your own mental health as well is like a big part of it. One of the things I wanted to get into, which is really relevant, but I think for a lot of creators in those early days, is like they might have started on YouTube and got a little bit of growth there, and they want to become a streamer. That's the thing they're most excited about, and they want to get into. It's just it's harder on time. Like they just don't have as much time. I think before when you were doing YouTube content, you can cut it up on off hours. So you could take 2 days to get a video together and then get it out on the next day, but you can't do that with live content as much. What made you go from YouTube to live?
If I'm going to be like bluntly honest, I'd say like financially, that was a huge blow to me. I almost like stopped entirely because of how ad revenue got affected. YouTube had an adpocalypse. Basically, for whatever reason, advertisements were being shown on controversial videos. Like, say, for example, you had like a white supremacist rally or something.
Was this 2016, right? When it started?
Somewhere around there. You know, you'd have like a Tide ad or some company that is like, hey, we don't want our ads on that video. That's crazy. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all these big name brands just yanked their ads like just over. And you watched your ad revenue just drop. Like you were making solid livable wage if you were doing well. And if you were doing really well, you're like crushing it. But at the same time, when they did that, you lost like half of your revenue like overnight. You're just like, whoa, like this is serious. And if you were smaller and just barely making it, you weren't anymore. Like it was just like, I got to do something. So I kind of fell in that category of like, I'm doing okay, but if this continues, I'm not going to be here very long. And at that time, my internet speed was getting a little bit better, small town again. And I was like, all right, let's try streaming. You know, so I hopped on Twitch and I just started getting into that content. But time management wise, it's way different. You know, if you stream 8 hours a day, you're like, well, do I have time to edit a video? Like, should I edit a video? That could take a few hours versus, you know, you play 4 hours, edit, you know, post a video and get that ready. It's not that hard. But when you're streaming 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, at least, you don't really have a lot of time and you got to plan it out a little bit better. But that transition was tough, but I kind of saw it. I think I saw it switch when it's kind of silly, but content creators did live commentaries instead of doing live streaming. So Xjoss was really popular at the time. I don't know if you're familiar with him as a Call of Duty creator.
No, I'm not. What's explain to me.
So Xjoss just did like really good gameplay. He dropped like 100 kills, maybe 200 kills, whatever. But he would just record himself with a video, just like a live stream now. But he did that, recorded a video live, and then just posted it that way. And before I saw that, I was like, well, that's actually pretty cool. You know, maybe. And then it's like, why don't we do that plus streaming? You know, like try to transition to streaming. Because back then, it was so funny. People thought you were weird if you streamed with a webcam. If you showed your face, people thought you were strange. Because no one did that.
Oh.
It didn't exist back then.
Yeah. I was on, do you remember Own3D? You remember that platform? That was the, kind of around just before Twitch or as Twitch was just starting out. Own3D was a platform. And I remember starting that. And I think we were webcams pretty much right away. But yeah, so on YouTube, you were like, it was like not a thing to show your webcam. Yeah,
you just had your voice in the gameplay. That was it. And I remember there's a video where Xjoss is like, yeah, this is going to be the next big, I think this is going to be the next big thing. And he was right. it just took a little while for people to catch on. And I think it was Justin.tv, which was Twitch. And then eventually from there, it went to Twitch and I started on Twitch.
And then, so you went to Twitch and now you tried Mixer or no?
So I had a weird thing. Like when I was with Twitch, I had a non-exclusive agreement. Like these were way before they were added in. And I was like, wait, I can stream elsewhere. And I was like, okay. So I hopped on to Mixer when it was Beam, I believe.
Yep.
Like before they got purchased out by Microsoft. I hopped on there and I tried and it did okay. But I think I was just too early. Like you wanted to be rare, but I don't think there were enough viewers at the time. And I was doing really well on YouTube at the same time. So I was multi-streaming from YouTube to Twitch and then Mixer at the same time. And I'd say my focus was on YouTube back then. You know, I think it was around PUBG. And I was pulling, you know, 3,000, 4,000 viewers on YouTube. Would I really want to focus on 10, 20 viewers on one other platform? And it was a tough decision, you know, but it's like, why not keep streaming and see what happens?
And now you are full-time on Facebook.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because, I mean, I was there in the early days of Facebook gaming. It was people in the gaming space were like, what is Facebook gaming? How did you make that switch and go, you know what, I want to try this?
That was tough. Stone Mountain was a big influence of me on that. We met during a PUBG event in Köln, Germany. And this is like before they ever announced anything. I want to say it was like a year, year and a half before. And I always thought it was odd. Stone streamed onto Facebook, even though, and he'd occasionally stream on Twitch, I think. But he was like making content on YouTube, streaming to Facebook. This is before any gaming thing was there. And I was like, this is really weird. Like, why would he do that? And he's like, no, you know, you really should try it. You know, you can build a community there. And he had a big platform. Like he had over 500,000 at the time or more, maybe even 1 million still. And he was one of the bigger content creators I knew. And I was like, this is interesting. And he's like, yeah, you should give it a shot. So I came back home and I tried it. And it failed miserably.
Oh, it was awful. I remember those early days. I was there on the other side.
I had like zero viewers. And I was like, all right, this is terrible. So I was doing well on YouTube still, like 2,000-4,000 viewers a night, just playing PUBG, just grinding it out. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll kind of forget about it. And I think a year later, they announced that they're launching Facebook Gaming. I was like, the hell is Facebook Gaming? And I was like, all right, well, that's interesting. Well, maybe not that they're serious about it. They actually had like a Facebook landing page. I was like, let's try it again. So I got back on and I streamed and I had 400 viewers my first stream. And I think I was playing PUBG or Fortnite at that time. I was like, whoa. That's significant. Like that's bigger than Twitch. I was like, all right, let's try it again. Next day, 800. Day after that, 1,400. Now it did like bounce around every so often, but I had concurrents, like 300-400 concurrent every day for a couple months. I was like, all right, this is definitely something I should pursue. And I kept streaming. And eventually Facebook reached out to me and explained, you know, they had their partner program and you know, if I was interested. And it was just really cool to have that connection with a platform. You know, I was partnered with Twitch for years and it's like, you're supposed to have a partner manager. Did you not know? It's like, no, did not know that. Like, so I think unless you were such a big content creator, you kind of get swept under. And, you know, it's not necessarily, I wouldn't say it's anyone's fault, but I can understand how it happens.
Yeah.
But having points of contact, people that are eager to work with you and want your opinion is super validating over here as well.
Cool. So you've been on the platform. Is it 2018 streaming?
Yeah. I want to say, let's see. I started January 2018, I believe. I think it would have been June or July 2018.
And you're doing, so July 2018, and you're doing 8 hours a day, 5 days a week?
Roughly, usually 8 hours a day. I try to get in there as much as I can. Some days you might miss an hour or so, but if you can get 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, that's better. I try not to take weekends off too. So sometimes I'll even try to get it around 7 days a week.
Oh, wow. So were you always at this kind of level of schedule or did you gradually go 2 hours every now and then 4 hours? And how did you make that switch? Because a lot of our listeners are not in a position where they can go, I'm going to do 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. They were in your shoes back in 2011.
I would say like, if I started back doing that, like I just remember I used to play games constantly. When I lived at home and I worked, if I wasn't working, I was making content. You know, I wasn't watching TV. I wasn't doing anything. I was literally just in the basement streaming, you know, living there, recording. And that was it. You know, I didn't really have, I kind of sacrificed a lot of my social life and really just went into content creation. And I was like, this is something I want to do and I want to pursue it. So I dedicated almost all my free time to it. And I mean, it's a sacrifice, but same time, it's like you kind of look at it for a way of like to get somewhere. And once you start doing well or you get results, it kind of encourages you to want to work a little bit harder or maybe just continue to what you're doing. Cause I also feel you can't just work. You know, that will break you in this industry. But at the same time, you do need to put at least some effort. Like there is going to be some sacrifices you're going to have to kind of have in order to make headway, at least. You know, if you can stream 4 hours a day, great. You could do six, you know, that might help you more. But I think there has to be a consistency. I think that's really important. And it can't just be, I'm on 6 hours a month and then you stop for like 3 weeks. You have to be on 6 hours a month for, you know, probably like 6 months at least. And you might build traction.
Which one of the things with a lot of our members is, you know, is that the churn out? They could be, you know, a month in, 2 months in, and it's like a lot of external factors kind of in their own self, like mental approach goes, oh, after 3 months, I haven't got the traction. And it's your point. You don't have that feedback loop of I'm doing really well. Right. So you get down on yourself and then you don't go and do it. How did you overcome those moments? Did you have supportive people around you? Did your family get it? Like how?
My family didn't get it until like I started making a decent income. They thought it was a waste of time for most. You know, they were somewhat supportive. They kind of knew, but I think they were more holding out like, oh, he'll get a YouTube job or something, you know, within the industry. And then once I started making more financially, doing well on YouTube, it was like, oh, wow, this is serious. But it took a long time to get to that point. I was just kind of skating by, you know, just barely. But that transition is probably the hardest thing to make too. You know, it's not overnight. It takes maybe years. And I think people forget that. A lot of these content creators that we know who have been around for 5 years, it's like they started at zero subs too. You know, they might've been streaming for, well, not necessarily streaming, but creating content for 7 years, if not. And I've also watched creators that hopped on and in 3 months, they have 50,000 followers. Here's like, wait a minute. You know, so it's not the same for everybody. Some things work, but I guess really if you're not streaming, you're not really going to have growth. So I guess you have to actually put in something, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. I think it's that discipline. And I think now, and I don't want to sound like an old man, I'm not that old, but it's this idea of instant gratification. You know, like I'm putting in the time, I need to see the results. And sometimes it's not like that, right? It's gotta take a while before it happens.
And I'd say like that's definitely like perfect way. You know, it's gonna take a lot of time. And I don't wanna like discourage people, but I know that you can do everything right and still fail. Like I hate to say it, like that's the reality with streaming. There's so much stuff you can't control. I've watched partners on Twitch that have been partnered for 5 or 6 years, you know, and they have 30 concurrents. And I'm like, wow, they're still streaming a lot. It's like, okay, after that long a time, what is not quite working well? And you kind of have to realize like, okay, if they've been playing the same thing, they're playing something obscure, it makes sense. But at a point, you have to somewhat try to evolve and try to adapt. Otherwise, you'll just get oversaturated. But even then though, if you're sitting at a lower viewer count on Twitch, it's hard to get out, you know, and it's not always your fault. You know, you could just be oversaturated and people can't find your content. I think that's the big killer. It's so competitive now that there's just so much there. A few people will slip through and do really well, really quickly. Other people, it's going to take a long time. And then sometimes you're just going to flatline. But if you keep creating content and you always try to change it, like I always try to say, like after 3 months, if you're not growing in some way, you're not making at least some headway in follower count, viewer count, whatever it is, maybe change what you're doing. Either the time of day you're streaming, what game you're playing. A good example was I played PUBG Mobile for a minute on Facebook, which is massive. And I was like pulling maybe 1,000 concurrent, just normally playing PUBG or maybe less. PUBG Mobile, I had about 15,000.
That is wild.
Like, I was like, okay. So sometimes just switching what you're doing, even though you might not be super passionate about that specific game, if you can build a foundation on that, and start having concurrence where you're at 100, 200 just from playing something else for 6 months, you can branch out. And I think that's the hard part is people just kind of get stuck in one pathway.
Yeah, and if you're doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results. Mm-hmm. If you're not getting
it, you branch out. I think that'll kill more careers than anything else.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. I think Cross, this was so interesting. And there's so much more I want to jump into. You know, there's... Like, I really want to know, are you ever going to go back to YouTube? Is that a goal of yours in 2020? Or is it going to start making content there? I wanted to ask a lot about SOAR, but again, there's a lot of questions I have, but I want to make sure we keep this tight for our listeners. And if they want to find out more, they can. But one thing before I go, what's next for you? What's coming up in 2020?
Oh, man. So right now, you mentioned YouTube a bit. It's some area that I do want to focus on. It's something that I think I should pursue. If you're streaming for 8 hours, I need to sit down and make sure that I'm putting out content and maximizing that to other platforms. With the investment lately, you know, you look at Facebook, Xbox, Amazon, you know, all these major companies and YouTube gaming getting into it as well. It's kind of a fight for content creation. And it's not just with streaming. It's with VOD content. VOD content is still king. And I think it's some area that I would like to go back and focus on. It's just making sure I have enough time to not take away from streaming. I think with editors now, I think it's a lot easier if you can find someone that's consistent. You know, you pass off some of that work and responsibility and let them kind of manage that. I think you had to have better time, at least with full-time streamers. I think that's the best way to go. But my plan's there. I think that'd be good. One thing, I don't know if I should mention it, but one thing I'd like to do moving forward into like maybe 2020 is pursue a little bit more influencer marketing within at least Facebook. I see a lot of content creators there that don't understand their value. And I see some companies kind of leeching in there a bit. And it's like, I think that they need to be aware of their worth. And with their rapid growth that they've had, you know, you see content creators that have 300,000 followers within a year, maybe more. Yep. And I definitely think having someone in that space or an agency in that sense to kind of help manage that transition, I think would be good. So that might be something I want to pursue in the future.
Cool. That's super, super exciting, man. I'm so excited to hear it. Where can anyone find you? If they love this podcast, they want to find Cross, where should they go?
So most of my socials are just Cross on Twitter, YouTube, and obviously Facebook. It's just with a K. So K-R-O-S-S. And you guys can find me there.
Cool. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me. I appreciate it a lot.
Take care.